I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we will talk about the challenges and opportunities confronting Indiana's emerging hemp industry. We'll look at what the future holds and what pitfalls there may be ahead. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer, Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about the challenges and opportunities confronting Indiana's emerging hemp industry. We'll look at what the future holds. We're going to look at also what's going on in the Indiana General Assembly regarding hemp. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer. He's joining us by phone. Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton are with me in the studio. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello. It's good to have you all here and to talk about this. I think probably at the risk of starting too simplistically, we probably ought to talk, though, about what hemp is and why this is simply an emerging industry and not an established one. I think I'll start with Justin on that one.
And that's a great place to start. I always like to use the analogy of dogs, right? Mm-hmm. You have the dog family. Through that family, you can have a German Shepherd or you could have a Chihuahua. People over time have bred those dogs for different purposes. People buy them for different purposes. So I think that's a good analogy for hemp and marijuana. Hemp and marijuana are both part of the cannabis family. But over the time, you've bred marijuana for its THC content, and you've bred hemp for its fiber and cannabinoid content, specifically CBD and basically everything but THC in there. So it's a non-psychoactive cousin plant that has uses that we have yet to even identify yet.
Mark, how did you get into the practice of growing hemp, and how long have you been in it?
I'm a sixth-generation row crop farmer in north central Indiana. Mm-hmm. My background is corn and soybeans and wheat. However, in an effort to add diversity to our farming operation, we started raising oil crops, specifically sunflowers and canola. And we have an on-farm edible cold press oil operation to where we process and bottle our own crops. They go directly from our hands to retail. The only way to manufacture hemp seed oil, which is a much different thing than CBD, but hemp seed oil is strictly a culinary oil, and the only way it can be manufactured is through a cold press operation, a cold press process that we already operate on our farm. So that was the basis of my interest in hemp.
When did you get started doing it?
Well, my interest started several years ago. At least looking into it, and with the 2014 Farm Bill legalizing hemp growing for research, that really spurred my interest. So to go through lots of different channels and make relationships with folks, eventually I was able to partner with Purdue University and regrew 12 acres, just 12 acres on my farm here in north central Indiana last growing season.
And how many are you doing now?
We're going to grow 100 acres again for research in the 2019 season. And the idea there is to take the next step and actually grow it up to scale.
And Samantha, how, you know, in the context of things, 100 acres in a state the size of Indiana is not a huge slice of land or anything like that, but it's a relatively big development. How big is this industry or the emerging industry here in Indiana?
Well, based off of talks, it's really been about there is a lot of potential in this industry. There's Kentucky, neighboring state, has really adapted to being able to grow, and they're taking advantage of the market they have and expanding it to reach out to other states who have businesses that need hemp. So it definitely has potential, but I don't think it's going to necessarily overtake soybeans or corn or some of the other staple crops in Indiana.
How big is it in Kentucky? Okay, she's pointing at Justin, so I think that means Justin's got this one.
I can't remember off the top of my head. I know they grew, I think they're growing close to like 60,000 acres this year. They've had an economic impact statement of $70+ million last year alone, and entrepreneurs and businesses investing in the processing side of things. So, and that's key. You know, we don't want our farmers just growing it to grow it. We want to make sure they have a contract in place with their end users so they know exactly how much they're getting paid for that biomass and where it's going.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the challenges and opportunities confronting Indiana's emerging hemp industry. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Mark, I'll ask, picking up on Justin's point here, I'm assuming that you're not doing this just to please yourself here, that there is an economic interest. You're a professional farmer, and you farm to make a living. What potential do you see in growing hemp? That's kind of what I'm trying to get at here, is what is the upside for people who are getting into this?
I'm in a little bit of a unique position in that I do have, you know, once we can get started on this in Indiana, I can manufacture my own product, and that's something that makes me a little bit unique. But I foresee this as kind of really exciting, and this has the potential to being a rotational crop in Indiana. Like was mentioned, I don't see this as any type of replacement to our current commodity crops, but this gives agriculture and farmers the opportunity to diversify by adding another crop. For hemp as a whole, we're really just approaching the starting line, as I like to say. We have a lot of infrastructure and a lot of things to learn about growing the crop here in Indiana. But I think that there is a lot of exciting potential for the crop as a whole.
What have been the challenges in growing it?
There's been actually quite a few agronomy-related challenges.
And I'm going to step in here real quickly. We probably, for those of you, for the people who don't farm with the expertise you do, probably ought to explain what agronomy is.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. No. It's just I've got to be their stand-in and ask those questions.
There's a lot of things about growing hemp that are very similar to our storied commodity crops here within our own state. But there are lots of things that are very unique to hemp. So this is why we're continuing to conduct research here in Indiana. And I was able to last year to take it and take the crop and put it in a traditional row crop setting using traditional farm equipment just to see if it's feasible. And the outcome of the research project was successful. We can grow at least 4 seed for sure this crop using traditional farming methods and farming equipment.
And of you've got 100 acres now. What percentage is that of all the acreage that you're farming this
that'll
year?
That'll be about 6% of our total acreage.
Okay. And do you see this becoming any? Will it remain at that 6% level for you, or could you see it growing to be more than that?
Well, I sure hope to see it grow, but we have to build these markets. So that's a very important component to the whole picture. Is we need to build markets, and we need to build markets preferably within our own state here. And I believe those markets will come as we develop other uses for this crop. It's estimated, I've heard as many as 22,000 different products can be made from hemp. Of those 22,000, how many are economically viable? We simply don't know yet because we haven't had the opportunity to explore all the markets. So this is a large component in the picture of hemp as an agricultural commodity in Indiana.
Samantha or Justin, has anyone looked at what the ceiling? I mean, it sounds like even the operation in Kentucky is still pretty much in the fledgling stages, and it's already a $70 million in a year industry. Do we have any idea what the ceiling is on this? Sam is shaking her head, so I'm assuming that that means she wants you to answer the question, Justin.
You know, and I don't think I can give you an exact number on that. I think there's just so much confusion out there. I think there's more misinformation than information out there right now. We did have the success of the 2018 Farm Bill at the federal level pass.
Mm-hmm.
States are still struggling, including us, on interpreting what that is and what states need to do. So we're kind of in a position we're not advocating that this is going to take over Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to under-promise and over-deliver here. Our starting point is we just want to offer our farmers an opportunity to diversify their income if they want to do it. And one of the coolest things I've seen working on this over the past couple years is sitting down with you know, the older farmer with his son who just graduated from Purdue or another university, and he's you know, inching his father forward to look at this and kind of make it's kind of the next generation's opportunity to own a crop on the family farm and make sure that they continue to thrive.
We had a story that a listener named Florence shared. And if you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what Florence did and call us at 866-476-3881. Florence said she wanted to share the story of how during World War II, the countryside of Indiana contributed to the war effort by growing hemp. Rope was made to send away. She remembers how you had to be careful driving around intersections because the crop was so tall. So Florence actually was setting up my next line of questions, Samantha, is since we're kind of getting, what are the ways that hemp can be used? What are, you know, the ways it can be used and sold?
Yeah, and I think right now, too, if you walk into a lot of stores here in Indiana, you'll see products that are made using hemp.
Mm-hmm.
I think back to the summer when there was a summer study committee understanding hemp, and one of the speakers, he actually owns a business up in Elkhart, and right now has to import hemp to be able to produce, he produces internal car parts, essentially the insulation in the car, and he uses hemp to make that. So there's definitely, there's things out there. There's also, you know, people use it. I've seen shampoo that has it in it. So there's lots of varieties out there that people use it.
Justin.
And probably the coolest aspect about this plan is you can use every last inch of it.
Mm-hmm.
So for Mark's standpoint, right, he's using just the seed. I know he had farmers contacting him wanting the fiber stock on him for animal bedding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an opportunity where the market's really going to dictate what you can use it for. And I think people are going to be really impressed with the diversity of where one plant can go and get chopped up in different ways.
Justin, is the confusion about its uses and its status, and it sounds like, and we're going to dive into the legal questions in the next segment, but is the confusion about all of these things in some way slowing the growth of the market?
I think that's entirely an accurate statement. There's an innate fear of marijuana, mm-hmm. not just in this state, but in other states around us. We're soon going to be an island on that front. You know, and it's, you know, marijuana and hemp have been coupled together for the past 80 years at the federal level. That takes a lot of undoing and a lot of education. And that's what we've been spending the last 5 years doing in the state, is just starting from an educational standpoint on here's our industry, here's what we'd like to do, and more specifically, here's not what we're trying to do.
Well, the fact that it sounds like you had to have a summer study committee on basically understanding hemp, what were the big misconceptions about that you felt like you had to clear up?
I think one of the biggest fears from legislators is that people are going to use this hemp program to grow marijuana with.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first educational piece is, look, you guys, you can't grow hemp and marijuana next to each other. In fact, if you look across the country, the hemp and the marijuana industries are suing each other for cross-pollination issues. So our response to that is, one, no criminal is going to avail himself to the states, give them their GPS location, a background check to grow marijuana. Secondly, they're probably just going to stick to the state forest and the cornfields growing marijuana here in Indiana. They're not going to be using this as a shield in any way.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana's emerging hemp industry. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer, Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about hemp on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer, Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. So, Mark, that question or comment story from our listener Florence, did that ring any bells for you?
Well, it rings a big bell. Ironically enough, my father grew hemp on our family farm during the Hemp for Victory campaign in support of the troops for World War II. So my father, that still works with me, we farm together, does have some experience in raising hemp for fiber. So that's something that's a little bit unique and something I'm real proud of. My father understood the role of hemp from the get-go. I did not have any issues with my father not wanting to get on board with us immediately. He has been tremendously supportive in all my efforts with hemp, which was very simple because he already got it.
And is this the same farm that you're still farming today, same land?
Yes, it is. I'm sixth generation on two separate tracks on two separate sides of my family, and that's something that I'm very, very, very proud of. We've been here 175 years.
So what guidance has he offered you in terms of, since he's been through it before and you hadn't, in terms of growing hemp?
It was very highly regulated back in the mid-40s. They simply grew for fiber. They straight cut the fiber, and it was put in shocks, like you used to see corn in shocks, and then went on a military transport train and was used for the war effort. They didn't really have anything to do with processing of the crop. What we're doing now is a little bit different niche, but it's still essentially the same crop. So we did have some limited experience already in growing this crop.
Samantha, given that you know, there is a history of Hoosier farmers growing hemp, were there factors other than the fact that, you know, it is linked in the public mind with marijuana that kept Indiana from figuring out a way to utilize this? Because clearly there was an understanding earlier in our history that it did have some practical uses.
Well, I have to say then that's where federal regulations go into effect, is that really impacted, you know, what states can do. And Kentucky, we've touched on, has under previous farm bill, had figured out a way to start their market there. But that, I think that's the big thing, is you had it essentially taken away as a commodity that could be grown. And so now it's almost reintroducing it into the state.
Okay, Justin, I think that's your cue to walk us through what is the rather tortured history of federal law and state law regarding hemp.
It's one of my favorite topics. Thanks.
Okay.
So basically you had the 14 Farm Bill. That was the first step. And that's it basically allowed states to implement pilot programs, allow their farmers to begin re-experimenting with this crop and getting reacquainted with it. As you mentioned before, there's strong history here in the United States with hemp. And what you see across the country is different states took that federal law and interpreted it differently, right? So Kentucky took it and said, we're going to stick up for our farmers. We're going to really see what kind of innovation they can come up with and see what kind of investments we can attract into our state through this program. Indiana, we kind of kept our program in a state bureaucratic quarantine that didn't get opened up really until last year with Mark Boyer being the first one to get a hemp license outside of Purdue. Now we have the 18 farm bill that you don't have to do this interpretation or legal gymnastics to allow farmers to sell for commercial purpose anymore. And so kind of the opportunity we have in front of us is with the 18 farm bill is it empowers states to be the primary regulator of hemp production in their state. And the key here is if we don't set up a program that's tailored to our needs, the USDA is going to do it for us in a one-size-fits-all approach. So this is coming to Indiana, whether we like it or not, and kind of our stance is let's make this as easy for our farmers as possible.
So what's going on, Justin? I'll stay with you in the General Assembly right now to deal with this.
So if you're paying attention to hemp, it's Senate Bill 516. Senator Randy Head, who's actually Mark Boyer's senator, carried the bill in the House. He filed it, or in the Senate, and filed it for us. And now Representative Eberhardt out of Shelbyville has the bill in the House. So we are diligently working with committee members and other stakeholders to try to get a committee hearing in the House. Mm-hmm. And then we'll kind of go through that process.
What will the bill do if it does become law?
That's a great question. So from the most basic standpoint is it requires our state to submit a compliant regulatory plan to USDA. And what that's going to do is empower Indiana to set up a program that's tailor-made to our needs. That's the first thing. The second thing it does is it right now in our statutes that we've had on the books since 2014, it's ambiguous as to whether or not farmers can grow hemp for a commercial purpose. So it clears up that ambiguity and says, yes, farmers make some money on this new crop. And probably the third thing it does is sets up a hemp advisory committee. And the intent there is to really professionalize our industry. We've talked a lot about the stigma mm-hmm. that's attached to hemp. We want to be treated like any other ag industry in the state. We want to have market participants providing feedback to our regulator on proposed rules and regulations and fees, and really just the best way to set up this program that's going to encourage the most amount of investments and the most farmer participation as possible.
Mark, did you experience that stigma at all? I mean, were there any people that looked at you funny when you said you wanted to grow hemp?
Well, maybe a bit, but generally my peers are other farmers.
Yeah.
Right now, with the current economic climate in agriculture, clears up a lot of stigma if there's potential for this crop for added diversity for agriculture. So, no, personally, I did not experience that. Now, what kind of was talked about behind my back, I don't know. But as far as outwardly with my peers, my neighbors, that are farmers in this area, they've been tremendously supportive of the project.
Do you get the sense that they're watching pretty closely to see if this is a way that that they could make some money too?
Absolutely, absolutely. I take numerous daily calls, asking where the industry is and how to get involved and what the potential is. And I don't have all those answers yet, but we're working on getting them.
What do you tell those folks? I mean, what have you told them about your experience so far?
I just explained to them my experience. I'm a row crop farmer. I have no particular expertise in hemp. Mm-hmm. I have grown it 1 year, but there's still a lot for me to learn. So I'm learning along with everyone else. And I just simply tell everybody that I do believe that there's potential here. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of infrastructure to build, and we have a lot to learn about growing this crop. But right now, is hemp the answer for $3 corn? I don't know if it is, but it probably has the most potential of being the answer of anything else that I've heard. So that's why I'm so heavily involved. And I believe this is tremendously beneficial and will be down the road beneficial to Indiana agriculture as a whole. And that's obviously something that's near and dear to my heart. And I will make every effort to assist and hopefully save some family farms while we do it.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the challenges and opportunities before Indiana's emerging hemp industry. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Liz has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Liz, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to know more about the industrial hemp usage in the plastics industry, considering the southwest corner of Indiana is a large molded plastics producer. I want to know a little bit better how that information is being distributed, and also if your contributors could share the benefits of using industrial hemp in the plastics production industry.
Thanks very much for the call and the questions, Liz. Justin?
So we mentioned earlier there's a company out of Elkhart County, Flexform Technologies, that's been experimenting by integrating hemp into their car door manufacturing process. A lot of people don't realize this. Henry Ford's first car, he actually made his car out of hemp. And it's stronger than what we have today, and it's lighter, and it's obviously better for the environment. So again, I mean, I wish I had all the answers. I don't. But I think there's so much potential here that we just need to make sure that we get government out of the way and get this crop into the hands of entrepreneur investors and farmers.
Samantha, what businesses or industries are looking at the development of the hemp industry with particular curiosity?
I think it's a broad spectrum. I think it's really seeing each one seeing how they could possibly corner the market, so to speak, with hemp. I mean, we haven't really had a new, and I say new, even though this was a product that was produced here in Indiana a time ago, but we haven't had, it's essentially a new commodity, a new crop that could potentially businesses can use in new ways that maybe they haven't thought about. So I think it's right now, there are some businesses that already are using it, but there's definitely, I would say, lots that are figuring out, is this a possibility for us to use?
I've heard of contracts calling for hemp-fed chickens, so that would be a good marketing for high-end retail grocery stores. Even again, these car manufacturers and their contracts are calling for natural fiber and hemp in there instead of fiberglass. So I mean, there's just again probably more questions than answers, but I think the potential's there enough where people should take this opportunity seriously.
Mark, in terms of the farming, are there so far it's being done on a very small scale. You did, 12 acres your first year, and you're up to 100, which is only 6% of your acreage, if I recall correctly. Did you notice in the year, were you able to achieve any economies of scale, some efficiencies as you get bigger to, as I would imagine, like most things, the cost is higher at the beginning than it will be after you've developed the process a little bit more?
Correct. And that's part of the going into the 2019 research project. We're trying to scale up to work on those efficiencies and see if we can do a better job of determining margin. One thing that this time we can take the crop further and explore those margins a little bit more than we were able to last year. And that's something I'm real excited about, and garnering that data and seeing the economics of this crop.
Is it more expensive in terms of both capital and labor, or less expensive, or about the same to raise hemp as opposed to other crops?
As far as inputs, it's very similar to growing field corn, which most farmers are very, very familiar with. It takes a similar nutrient profile from the soil. It's not dramatically different as far as the economics of growing corn. As far as marketing that crop, we need to build markets. There are a few markets out there, but the additional markets will come. And the exciting thing is that I think many more markets will come from different parts of the plant, and will continue to improve the margins of growing this crop.
What do you anticipate, when both the market has matured and the process for delivering hemp has matured. What do you anticipate the price will be?
I don't have a real solid data on that, but basically what I can say is I don't think if we can market all different parts of this plant, the potential of in a seed crop, I'm not talking about CBD, but I'm talking about a seed crop, margins, net margins of $800 to $1,200 an acre are not out of the question.
And how would that compare, say, to corn?
Right now, that's more than double corn crop.
So, Justin, it sounds like there's going to be a tremendous incentive here for a lot of farmers to shift to hemp production, correct?
Yeah, and that's kind of, I mean, the interest in the state now after this farm bill passed has been pretty incredible. You know, again, it depends on the variety you're growing. For CBD, I mean, you can net $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 an acre depending on the quality of the hemp biomass you're selling. Mark's got a great idea on the seed side. The fiber is a different market as well. So, again, the potentials are really just waiting to be discovered. And I think right now you're seeing a lot of the investments go into the CBD growing because the returns are pretty incredible right now. Which is fine, but you know the important part is there's more to hemp than just CBD here, and Mark's a perfect example of that.
We are talking about the challenges and opportunities before the Indiana hemp industry today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jack has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jack, you're on the air.
Hey, Justin. Jack from Brownsburg.
Hey, Jack.
Mark, you've got a tiger by the tail, I believe. And I was just wondering, I just read an article about the percent of THC. Where do you get your actual hemp seed versus your so-called marijuana? And if it does go over your 3%, I understand you have to burn the crop.
That is
Thanks
correct.
Very much for the call, Jack.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
Jack, that is correct. The crop has to be tested, and it has to come in below 0.3% THC, which is a tremendously low number. We have a safety net in that we are only going to plant certified seed. Certified seed that's brought into the state from other states. With certified seed growers. So we have a comfort level that crop is already going to be under 0.3%. So it basically comes back to seed breeding. And that's a whole nother component of the hemp industry, the seed business. If we can establish this crop and establish markets for this crop, the seed business will explode because there will be a tremendous shortage of quality seed. So that's a whole nother additional component to the industry as a whole. But we have a comfort level with the seed breeding and the seed breeders that they're providing us high quality seed. But yes, it does have to come in under 0.3% THC, or the crop is no longer considered hemp and will be required a destructive end.
Samantha, in your reporting, I mean, that's a question also born of kind of the confusion we've been talking about here. You know, how much of how widespread is this confusion, and how long do you think it's going to take to dissipate?
When you're talking about THC?
Well, just relating to the growth of hemp, period, because this is a procedural question that...
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's definitely right now until we have the legislation's working on trying to set regulations for this, and I think that's going to be help with the education of this is when there's actually something in state law that people can go look at and understand. I think right now we're kind of in this gray area. I think there's, you know, questions of what could this market do? What does this mean for producers as well as maybe the seed distributors, as Mark touched on? There's a lot of those questions. So I think it's definitely going to be an ongoing conversation.
We're talking about hemp today on No Limits. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer, Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about hemp today on No Limits. It's an emerging industry here in Indiana, and we're looking at what the future holds for it. My guests are Indiana hemp farmer Mark Boyer, Justin Swanson with Bose Public Affairs Group, and Indiana Public Broadcasting business reporter Samantha Horton. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Travis has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Travis, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. You had mentioned earlier about the opportunity or potential for many farmers switching to hemp crop over corn. What does hemp look like in using that biomass for ethanol production over corn, both in environmental impact and how good of a product it would be?
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Justin and Samantha are both shaking their heads. So, Mark, I think by default, we're going to throw that one to you.
I think I can handle that. Yeah, that's actually another exciting component. Ethanol can be, cellulose ethanol can be manufactured from hemp. There again, I am not familiar with the economics of that. I don't know if it's more efficient than corn, but that is for sure something that will be studied, and maybe it does have some potential.
We have a question from a listener named Brian via Facebook. And again, if you want to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Brian writes, could you have your guests speak to the benefits that hemp has on the soil itself, such as having another crop to rotate, nutrient advantages, our fertilizers, and chemicals needed? Mark, I think that's another farm question, so you get that sure. one as well.
Sure thing. As far as chemicals, essentially there are none. There are no labeled herbicides or pesticides for hemp in the United States. And that's a bit of a challenging aspect, but I believe it's also a benefit. So I believe it is beneficial to soil health for that reason. As far as nutrients required, it does seem to respond very well to nitrogen. It seems to have a pretty tremendous nitrogen response. So like I mentioned, very similar to corn. Corn works kind of the same way. So it does require some fertilizer inputs, but as far as chemicals, there are none that are labeled and they cannot be used at this point.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Sean. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, in the 90s, I was a medical marijuana activist and went around the country with Steve Hager, who was editor of High Times magazine, speaking about it. I was in High Times. I also helped produce the local cable access show Hemp, Environment, and You. We've got 86 shows in the can, more than any other cable show in Indiana and more than any other show on that topic in the country. The amount of out-in-the-open harassment we got from law enforcement was incredible. We had rallies and festivals with many other groups. We were 100% nonviolent, but in the late 90s, we got shut down, and the people who put on the festivals had their lives ruined, which was a shame because they were great people. Nearly everyone involved locally were. Looking how far we have come in such a short time, thank you guys. Keep up the great work. So, Justin, I'm going to ask, because that sort of sets up something we were talking about during the break, which is, where is the push? You know, so far we've talked about this and almost makes it sound like the equivalent of something no one would oppose. Where is the pushback coming on this?
So I think the way the Senate Bill 516 stands now, we did have the Hemp Advisory Committee, instead of having market participants on there and experts who are actually doing this, we got it replaced with state bureaucrats. So that was really disappointing from an industry standpoint, because we feel like in order to have buy-in from the regulatory structure that gets in place, you need to have input from the people who are going to be operating under it. And secondly, we want to be treated like any other ag industry in the state. To that gentleman's point, the email, I mean, we, again, there is stigma. You know, I've been personally laughed at for the last 3 or 4 years talking about this issue. So that's probably one of them, I think, and that stems out of an innate fear of marijuana and what is this committee going to recommend? And so I think it's just fear that's driving that. And also, unfortunately, in the bill, we are taking a step backwards on CBD products by criminalizing the personal possession and use of hemp flower and also vapable CBD products.
We've gotten another message via Facebook. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. This one is from Robert. Robert writes, I've been cheering for Indiana hemp farming for 20 years. As a rotation crop, it nourishes the soil for bean and corn crops. From it, you get multiple modern fiber uses, including hempcrete, food-safe resin, multi-use oil, and even food-grade seed. Additionally, Indiana is already poised to take advantage of every industrial facet of hemp use. So, Justin, probably it's the last part of that, how we are poised. What do you think Robert means by that?
So, one, we're known as Crossroads of America, right? We're going to be transporting this stuff in and out of the state nonstop in the future. Secondly, if you talk to people down in Kentucky and you ask them where the best place to grow Kentucky or grow hemp is, it's Indiana. We have the best soil for it, and in my opinion, we have the best farmers to start to begin reinventing ourselves here and really supporting a reemerging market.
Mark, do you think, you know, in terms of your own farming, right now you're focusing on the oil, but will you, could you see expanding that and using the hemp you grow for other purposes as well?
Absolutely. The seed variety that I'm growing in this upcoming year is also a dual-purpose variety, and I'm going to be working on the economics of harvesting seed and harvesting fiber as well. And the exciting component of that is that's a two-commodity, one-growing season crop, and that's very, very exciting as a farmer that always studies margins, that's an exciting component of this crop.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana's emerging hemp industry. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what Tyler has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm joining the conversation a little late, so please forgive me if this question has already been addressed, but I'm interested to see from your speakers if there's what type of increase or decrease a farmer can see from a financial yield by switching to hemp over a traditional crop like corn or soy, and then also if there's any added benefit to being organic certified.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Tyler. I think that's another one that probably Mark can address best.
Essentially, with a hemp versus a traditional commodity crop, by traditional commodity crop, I mean field corn, soybeans, or wheat. Essentially, I would say that probably you'll be looking in, should be able to looking at double the margin. Also, from an organic standpoint, basically, organic crop is worth double what conventional crop is. Now, it's going to be much more challenging in that organic environment and growing this crop, but essentially it would be worth double the amount of a crop grown in conventional methods.
We've gotten an email from a listener named John. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. John writes, is it possible that our substance control rules contribute to the net outflow of young people from our state? Justin.
I think it's currently a deterrent for investment into the state in those particular areas. And hemp or obviously marijuana is still illegal here. You know, I know Kentucky's looking at medical marijuana, so it's not going to be long until we're literally an island of prohibition on the marijuana side. And at some point, it becomes a consumer protection issue, right? Any marijuana that gets rejected on that regulated market, guess where it's coming? Mm-hmm. You know, it's coming into Indiana. You know, and one of the arguments on sports betting this year has been, well, it's happening anyway, so the state might as well get their cut. Well, you can use that argument with a lot of things here, including marijuana.
And what do you anticipate out of this, you know, when this, let's assume, as Mark said, that, you know, when this begins to mature right now, if all other things remain equal, he'll make twice as much money producing hemp as he would corn. What would be the tax benefits to that? I mean, how much more? Presumably, when Mark makes more money, there are more revenues that flow into the state's coffers as well.
Sure, yeah. And that's the idea. I'm not too up to date on how ag products are taxed like that. But I mean, just from the CBD perspective, that's all retail, 7% tax. So this is all revenue generating income for the state. And frankly, Senate Bill 516 is really the only jobs bill we have out there that's going to create a new industry and create jobs and create investments coming into the state.
Samantha, is this one of the arguments, and Justin kind of alluded to it when he talked about the sports betting thing. For those of us of a certain vintage, we remember a time when states around Indiana had legalized gambling and Indiana did not, and there would be a huge exodus of people. I remember when I worked at the newspaper, all the guys in the composing room would be collecting money, and someone would be making the run to Ohio or Illinois to buy lottery tickets and all of that. And part of what spurred then the Indiana General Assembly was the idea that there was an awful lot of money fleeing this state at that point. Are there parallels in this debate as well?
I think there's some. I think with the 2018 Farm Bill, essentially you're seeing this federal opening of this market. And right now there's companies that maybe are looking into how can they use hemp in the products they create. And they're looking for people who can provide the hemp then. And so right now it's kind of this open, farmers are getting a chance to possibly look at who they can distribute to. So it's one of those things where, I mean, you have Kentucky who has farmers who are actively participating in the hemp production. So then the question becomes, if Indiana doesn't hurry up or get involved in this sooner than later, would that mean that some of those deals maybe made with companies and farmers might start impacting then being essentially closing off Indiana farmers from maybe getting some of those deals that they might be able to get right now?
Mark, with the legislation before the Indiana General Assembly right now, in what ways do you think that will impact, you know, the way you do your work and the way you farm your crops?
Well, I'd like to be able to rotate hemp. There again, we always go back to the markets. If we can establish a market, I'd like to be able to rotate hemp in as a broader rotational crop in my own operation. One thing that I definitely can say about hemp is it has to be rotated. And that's why I cringe a little bit when I hear that we're going to replace soy with hemp. Mm-hmm. No, we're not. that's not feasible. But what is feasible is adding this as a rotational crop to add diversity to farming operations across the state. And that's pretty exciting.
And are there other changes you would like to see in either Indiana or federal law that would make your life and work easier?
To get 516 through the state house and signed by the governor would be a huge step, and we're hoping that happens. But personally, I would really like to see that regulatory committee. Made up at least partially of farmers and processors that are already in the industry that know the industry. That's something that I hope to see happen that comes out of the House here soon.
Samantha?
Yeah, and that's what Mark said, I think one of the challenges too that's been is the way Indiana's set up. There's been a huge question of the oversight of this implementing hemp production into Indiana. Who's going to oversee it? Trying to make sure the market doesn't get oversaturated. That's a huge concern. So there's a lot of those conversations right now that are happening, but it's hard to compare Indiana and Kentucky because Kentucky's situation with oversight is different than Indiana's. So that's a huge question, is then how are we going to fund a group to essentially to make sure that the hemp is being produced correctly, the THC levels are remaining low, and things of that nature.
Well, and that's a great point. I mean, the state seed commissioner's office operates off of fees. They don't get any appropriation from the state, so there's really no fiscal impact to the state for these programs. And it really, the cost is associated with people who are actually using the system. So that's a key point. You know, and again, we've had a program since 2014 and have not had any issues with people trying to grow marijuana under it. So, you know, we're really excited for the future.
We're getting close on time here. So, Justin, I'll bring it back to you, since the real news hook here, I guess, is the legislation. Could you remind us again where things stand and then what the outlook might be?
So it came out of the Senate 47-1. That one no vote was basically a protest vote from Senator Talian, who said, basically saying, hey, we need to look at, you know, why are we criminalizing two CBD products since we've just gotten clear guidance from the federal government? So we're in the House right now, and we're waiting to get a committee hearing scheduled. Once we have a committee hearing and it passes out, we'll go to second reading and then third reading. And then, not to get too into the weeds, but there's a chance this bill goes to what we call conference committee, which is the last 2 weeks of session.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really when the Senate author and the House sponsor will get together and try to figure out a compromise on changes to the bill.
What, in terms of the committee, what have you been told about the chances that it will be assigned to committee? And do you anticipate any roadblocks going forward?
So I think there's a strong possibility we'll get a committee hearing. We met with the chairman this morning to talk about that. We're working on when the best time to do that is. And I think in terms of roadblocks, it's really, are we really going to criminalize legal products right now that are on the shelves in Indiana? And also, are we really going to shut out people who know what they're doing in helping our seed commissioner develop the proper rules and regulations and fees for the program?
And, Samantha, where do you anticipate taking this story next?
Well, I'm definitely right now working out talking with businesses that are looking at implementing hemp into their production, some who already have. I think that's really what Eli's question has been, is what does this mean for industries? And there's a lot of questions there. So that's where I see myself going, is trying to find out more answers for that.
Are they looking at the passage of the Senate bill to provide some clarification for them as well? We've talked about it on the production side, but
possibly to an extent. But the big thing is, if they know they can get it from other states or other sources, then that's obviously something that they're going to look at doing. And if Indiana can't seem to find a policy then itself.
Okay, so it sounds like in the next couple of weeks we'll know quite a bit more about where this industry is going, correct, Justin?
That's right.
Well, I think that'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank all three of you for what has been a fascinating conversation on a new and developing part of the state's landscape and its economy. Also, obviously, I would like to thank our listeners, as usual, for some great questions and comments. It is a tremendous amount of fun and a great source of satisfaction to be doing a show for the smartest audience in radio. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.